Register Radio is sponsored by Ignatius Press, the premier publisher of outstanding Catholic books, magazines, videos, and music, faithful to the magisterium of the Church. On the web at ignatius.com.
From the National Catholic Register, this is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
This week on Register Radio, Janetta Mello talks to biographer John Coverdale about the cause for canonization of Father Joseph Muskies, the priest who brought Opus Dei to the United States. Also, Dan Burke discusses great books in education with Magdalen College President George Harn and student Chris Rand. Welcome again to Register Radio, a co-production of EWTN and the National Catholic Register. I'm Elena Rodriguez, sitting in for Tom Price, who is away on business this week. Please pray for his safe travels. I'm here with Janetta Mello, editor-in-chief of the Register, and with Dan Burke, executive director of the Register. Thanks to both of you for joining us. Our first guest is John Coverdale. He has personally known and chronicled the lives of Opus Dei founder José María Escrivá de Balaguer and his successor Álvaro del Portillo, as well as servant of God Joseph Muskies, who first brought Opus Dei to the United States. The diocesan phase for the Father Joseph cause finished earlier this May, and John is here to talk about the canonization process moving to Rome. Jeanette?
John, welcome to Register Radio.
Well, thank you very much. Pleasure to be here.
A possible new saint, and this is a Father Joseph Muskies. He brought Opus Dei to the U.S., and as I understand it, they just finished a phase in the cause of his canonization.
Sure. So the diocese of Boston has been working at trying to determine whether Father Joseph is a candidate for holiness or sanctity or not. And I think it was just last Monday, if I recall correctly, that they kind of closed that diocesan phase. The Cardinal O'Malley was there, and they kind of took oaths from everyone who had been involved in taking the testimony, etc., and now they will send all the information they have collected off to Rome, where the Congregation for Causes of the Saints will look at it. So I think it was a wonderful step. At one level, it was a kind of purely formal, legal sort of proceeding with people taking oaths and signing documents and all that sort of thing. But at another level, it kind of indicated that the Diocese of Boston, after two or three years of investigating, has concluded, yes, there's enough evidence here for us to forward this on to Rome and for them to look into it.
And this is evidence of holiness, of sanctity,
correct,
of this priest, Father Joseph. Now, tell us a little bit about the life of Father Joseph.
Well, Father Joseph was an engineer who joined Opus Dei right after the end of the Spanish Civil War. That's 1940. And he was one of the first three members of Opus Dei whom the founder, St. José María, asked if they would be willing to be ordained. And so he was ordained one of the first three priests of Opus Dei in 1944. And then in 1949, he came to this country to start Opus Dei. And that was really he really didn't speak much English at all.
Wow.
That's probably putting it kind of charitably. he had no money. He didn't know anybody here.
Wow.
And the message that he was bringing, which was that, God is calling everyone to holiness, not just to kind of keeping your nose clean, being a person, but something much more, and that call wasn't just for priests and nuns, of course it was for them, but that it was for everyone. That struck an awful lot of people as kind of crazy. They kind of thought, if you really want to take your religion that seriously, will you become a priest or a nun? And he said, well, if God calls you that, of course, but if not, he's calling you to be holy as a lawyer or as a housewife or as a ditch digger or whatever it is that your place in life is.
And that's right. And that is the message of Opus Dei. That's what the work of Opus Dei is trying to emphasize that the universal call to holiness, that each of us is called to focus on sanctifying our life in the ordinary circumstances of every day.
And, well, I couldn't have said it better.
Very good. Well, I guess one of the things I'm wondering is where Father Joseph landed.
He came with one young lay member of the work, and a couple of others joined him a few days later. But they landed here in New York, and they very quickly went to Chicago, which was where they opened the first center.
Sure.
And that was another remarkable story. I mean, as I said, he really didn't have any money at all. And within about 6 months, he managed to buy a quite large house near the University of Chicago to start a university residence in part
wow.
by convincing the real estate agent to give him his commission so that he could use it for the down payment.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, he must have been a man of quite incredible persuasion. For the cause of canonization, you need to have heroic virtues.
Right.
So what would you say were the heroic virtues of Father Joseph?
Well, of course, it has to be kind of the whole, you know, the whole nine yards of faith and hope and charity. He certainly had great faith in God, and that he himself had a vocation to do that, and his hope was really quite remarkable. I mean, he was just sure that things would work out. And he had great love for people, for individuals, as well as for God, of course. And then a whole bunch of, you know, just normal kind of everyday virtues. I think the one that stood out in the minds of many people was just how hard he worked.
Mm-hmm.
He was a tremendously hard worker. And I'm always impressed by the fact that I don't think that was just natural temperament, because his sister says that as a young man, as a student, she said, well, he studied, but not very much. He didn't have to study very much. He was super smart. But still, she said, no, he wasn't, you know, he wasn't really particularly diligent.
That's right. And not all of us are called to go out into these foreign missions, as Father Joseph really was. But we're called to apply the same kind of diligence in our daily lives.
Well, that's exactly what he would say. Yes, he would say, you know, I'm a priest, and so the work I have to do is that of a priest, preaching and hearing confessions and saying Mass. But what makes you holy isn't doing some specific form of work. It's doing it well for love of God.
This is Jeanette DeMello. I'm on Register Radio, and I'm speaking to John Coverdale. We're talking about Father Joseph Muscis, who is the first priest in Opus Dei, to start Opus Dei here in the U.S. His cause for canonization is well on its way.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard an interesting story, a connection of to Pope John Paul II. Tell us about the mosaic that sits in St. Peter's Square.
Opus Dei, for a good number of years, has organized a kind of international student gathering in Rome in Holy Week. And John Paul II regularly had a special audience for the students who came to that. And in one of those audiences, one of the students was speaking to him and said, well, Holy Father, I've noticed that St. Peter's Square is kind of incomplete because there's statues of, you know, every saint under the sun, but not of the Blessed Virgin. And the Pope said, well, you know, that's right. We ought to do something about that.
That's
right.
And
so later on, Don Alvaro del Portillo heard about that, and he had an architect draw up some plans, possible positioning, etc. And nothing much happened for some time, but then after John Paul II was shot there in the square on the Feast of Our Lady of Fatima, that thought came back to him. He said, you know, we really ought to put up a picture of Our Lady here. And he had the statue, well, it's not a statue, the mosaic put up that's there on the side of the Apostolic Palace.
Yes, it's beautiful. And if I remember correctly, it says Totus Tuus, which means totally yours. And it's
right.
Pope John Paul's motto,
correct.
Which was his entrustment of himself to and the church to Our Lady. Now, I have to admit, I know quite a bit about Opus Dei because I studied at an Opus Dei school in Rome at Santa Croce.
That's why you're doing so well in the
interview. The university, the Pontifical University of the Holy Cross. So I had quite a bit of time learning about Opus Dei. I was able to work in the press office for the canonization of St. Jose Maria. And it was a huge blessing, as you said, for me to be in the presence of all of those people working who knew St. Jose Maria. And so it's an interesting thing to see now others who worked so closely with him moving forward in the cause of canonization. It's a real testament to the work of these men. If
well, you,
if If you could tell us a message that these three men would give to the world today, to our listeners today, what would that message be?
Well, I think it's the one that you summed up a few minutes ago, the saying that God is calling each and every one of us to really try to love him with our whole heart and mind and soul and strength and our neighbor as ourselves.
Now, let me ask you, how can we find out more information about Father Joseph?
Well, perhaps the easiest way, he has a website.
Okay.
Which is www.josephmuzquiz.org.
Very good. Well, we'll make sure to put that website in our notes for the show, and so people can look at our blog and find a link to him.
And now, I could also say there's an excellent book about him, which I wrote.
That's right.
Called Putting Down Roots, which is published by Scepter Publishers and available on Amazon or anywhere you might want to buy a book.
Excellent. Well, we'll definitely put that in the notes as well. John, thank you so much for talking to us about these three holy men.
Thank you for having me.
When we return, we will show you a college where Catholic students are not under persecution if they speak up for their faith, and students can actually trust what their professors teach them in class. What a concept! This is Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Stay with us.
Dr. Ray Guarendi talks about the National Catholic Register.
The Register is catechetical news. In other words, it teaches the news from the perspective of the catechism. And you can learn all kinds of good things about the church and faithful living through the Register. They cover a wide, wide range. Catechesis, explaining the faith, what's going on in the world, in the Vatican. Good, solid Catholic journalism. The Register helps people cut through the spin. There's no spin in the Register. It is faithful Catholic teaching, analyzing of the news from a Catholic perspective.
To start your subscription to the National Catholic Register today, go to EWTN.com and click on the banner for the Register or call 800-854-6316.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
Welcome back. Along with Jeanette DeMello and Dan Burke, I'm Elena Rodriguez. Tom Price is away on business travel this week. There is hope in youth, and Catholic education is very much alive and vibrant. In a moment, you'll hear from a young student about the wisdom that has built civilizations. We have two guests for you. Dr. George Horn is a convert to Catholicism and is president of the College of St. Mary Magdalene, where he also teaches music and humanities. George has a doctorate in medieval music from Princeton University and a master's in great books from St. John's College. He has invited a recent graduate of the College of St. Mary Magdalene to be with us on this interview. Christopher Chris Rand just earned his bachelor's degree in liberal arts and philosophy, as well as an apostolic catechetical diploma. Congrats to Chris the grad. The executive director of the Register, Dan Burke, is about to take us on a tour of great books in education with Magdalene College president George Horn and student Chris Rand. Dan?
Dr. Horn, this is Dan. I'm excited to learn and have been excited to learn over the years and follow what's happening at St. Mary Magdalene. My instinct is that there's something very special brewing there that I really wanted to make sure that our listeners on Register Radio and EWTN Radio got a chance to hear about. And I wanted to start with an unusual offer that you're making that I haven't seen other good Catholic institutions offer. What is this thing about free room and board at a Catholic college?
Yeah, that's right, Dan. The college is offering free room and board to all incoming freshmen this year, as well as transfer students. We believe that what we have here at the college is a transformative experience for young people that will serve ultimately them, their families, and the larger culture. And we want to make it as available as possible to as many people as possible. Given the economic climate in which we find ourselves, it's difficult for a lot of families. They think that this kind of education is out of their reach. And we put our heads together and really try to come up with the way for what we have to be as accessible as possible to as many Catholic families as possible.
So you offer free room and board. Is there any requirement for that, or is it just for any new students?
Any student who meets the normal admissions requirements in terms of grades and things of that sort. So if they qualify to attend the college, then they qualify to receive free room and board as freshmen or transfer students.
Wow, that's fantastic. So now that I put the cart before the horse, let's talk a bit about St. Mary Magdalene's unique approach to education. Tell me, what is Great Books Education, and why is it important and unique?
Well, it's an approach to education that goes back to the sources, the original foundations of education. Originally, education was the pursuit of wisdom. It was an attempt to recover and discover the nature of the human person, the nature of the universe, the nature of God, and to put these all together in a whole, it would be a kind of roadmap for living life well. That's what education was originally about. And the Great Books movement that came around in this century was an attempt to recover that by introducing students to the great books, the primary sources that have shaped our culture, but also as sources of truth. There's this idea that's pretty radical in today's culture that you can read these books and ask questions and pursue the truth seriously, and you can discover important things. You can discover truth. It's not all relative. It's not all historically conditioned, and these truths are recoverable. We do this at the college primarily through dialogue, through a tutor or professor who leads a conversation with students who have done a close reading of the text, and it's very serious, but it's also joyful because we believe that we're going to find what we're looking for. We believe the truth can be known, but it's done largely by entering this conversation, if you will, with the great authors and the great thinkers that have come down to us, all the way from Homer to Pope Benedict XVI. We read his works as well. So it's a wonderful stretch of history and historical works that we discover.
You know, it's fascinating to me about your approach back to the sources. I've involved, as you know, in theological education and institutions, and I've often found that the errors from the best of our theologians or the best of our Catholic thinkers can be traced back to a disconnect from the source documents. And I've always thought that, you know, when all you do is study great commentaries on great commentaries that are reacting to great commentaries, you somehow lose a direct connection to the sources itself. Do you find that this approach yields a more, how would you put it, pure and a better understanding of the topic at hand? What is it about this sticking to the sources that really helps to mitigate these kinds of challenges?
Well, I think it allows our students to avoid a lot of the potential distractions. As you say, when you're dealing with commentaries on commentaries, it's easy to get caught up in a sort of a game of he said, she said, he said. And it's easy to forget to ask the most basic question, which is this true? We try to consider each of the things we read in some basic terms, basic questions. You know, is this true? And then what are its implications? And C.S. Lewis said in one of his works, he pointed out that it's it was the Screwtape Letters. In fact, he talked about the idea of keeping people from reading old books. That you wanted them to read only contemporary books. And then if they do read old books, the last thing you ever want them to think of and ask about is whether what they're reading is true. Get caught up in this discussion about commentary. And so in the Great Books approach, we just cut directly to that fundamental question, is it true? This is particularly powerful with error, as you said, in some ways, because so much of our culture is filled with, you know, recycled Freud, recycled Nietzsche. And for our students to actually consider these authors in their pure form, then they know what the challenges are to their faith. They know what their challenges are to the truth. And when they're having conversations outside of the college, and people bring up these ideas, they can say, well, you know, I've actually read Nietzsche, and here's what he says, and here are the problems with what he says. So it's an invigorating thing, and there's nothing dull about it. But going to the sources is an exciting adventure, I think, for our students and the teachers.
This is Dan Burke with Register Radio, and we're talking with Dr. George Harn, who is the president of St. Mary Magdalene College, and they're offering a unique program, a new program, where students who qualify for the college can receive free room and board, and talking a bit about the unique education, a unique approach to education with the Great Books emphasis. Dr. Harn, With respect to the transformative effect of education, this is something at the heart of what you're seeking as an outcome of the work of St. Mary Magdalene. Tell me a bit about that on a personal level. Then I'd like to jump over to Chris Rand, who's, of course, a recent graduate, and just get his perspective on how the his education there has really changed him.
Sure. Well, we offer a kind of formation that is intellectual but also spiritual. All the students at the college are called to pursue the truth, but to do that simultaneously with pursuing a deeper and a stronger faith. At the center of our college is the chapel, and our school year kind of moves to the rhythms of the liturgical year. So while these students are reading these great books, they're also praying together and worshiping together, and this forms a unique kind of synthesis, a unique whole for our students as they move through their 4 years. You know, a lot of schools it's about sort of recovering or gaining information that you then pass back to the teacher. For us, our students learn an enormous amount from reading these texts, but it's also intellectually formative in that they develop skills in reading closely, in speaking, in leadership in many cases. These are skills that are going to be transferable to whatever area they go into in the postgraduate life. But they also learn to listen. They learn to listen closely to people in the classroom, but they also listen through prayer to try to discern what God's will is for their life. And so over the course of 4 years, these skills, these abilities, this deeper prayerfulness, this deeper spirituality leads to a transformation so that they are prepared to go into whatever area God may be calling them, whether it be religious life, the priesthood, or an active lay vocation in the world. We believe they're going to be salt and light wherever they end up. So it's more than just information, the acquisition of information, but it is transformational. I think for the whole person, it's really an integrated approach to the person that leads to a difference in the way they live their lives after they graduate.
You know, I had the unique opportunity to, as you know, at your invitation, come to the school, and my time there at Mass was probably one of the highlights. Frankly, the way that you do Mass with respect to music, and even the ad orientem posture of the priest, was in my mind the vision of the Second Vatican Council, as I read at least Pope Benedict's interpretation. So it was definitely a beautiful experience, and the students were a delight to meet. Let's talk to one of them, Chris Rand. Chris, tell me a little bit about what it's like to be a student when your teachers are Plato, Virgil, and Aquinas.
Well, when it comes to interacting with texts and with teachers who've kind of transcended time, you have a perspective that there's something there that's worth knowing and worth looking for, and it's almost an encouraging factor of those studies to have such wisdom attainable, and it just takes the effort of the student to put themselves into that position to learn. And it's completely different from, you know, listening to just someone at the front of a room lecture. It's listening to wisdom that has built civilizations.
Listening to wisdom that has built civilizations. I don't think you could sum it up any better than that. Tell me, what are you doing today? I mean, you're a graduate, and I think you're currently an intern at the World Youth Alliance. How has your education affected your future and where you're headed and what God's calling you to?
Well, the last 4 years here has really shown me what it means to have a Catholic identity with my life, and how to integrate that into everything that I do. The culture here is that which promotes not only, you know, intellectual achievements and advances of the person, but a kind of a spiritual grounding to be able to do that. And so I came to the end of my 4 years here, and I understood that my vocation is that one to educate and to teach, and the World Youth Alliance is doing fantastic work in that of establishing the dignity of the human person, and having an opportunity to work with them on an international level is something that I hope to be able to do, so that it's not just a small Catholic college where it's being agreed upon, but you're taking the skills that you have kind of practiced and honed for the last 4 years, and you're putting them into play on a stage where not everybody initially agrees that there is right and wrong, that people have a natural human dignity. So it's the next step, and it's the next challenge.
Fantastic, Chris. Dr. Harn, as we close out here, you know, hearing from Chris is very encouraging, and the program that you offer, this Great Books program, I think there are few opportunities for Catholic students out there to dig in at the level that you provide and the way you provide. I think what you're doing is truly a gift and a blessing to the church. How can folks find out more about how to take advantage of the free room and board there, and or to just come and explore what's going on at the College of St. Mary Magdalene?
Well, thank you for your time today, Dan. This has been great. People who would like to know more about the college can go to our website, www.magdalene.edu, or you can search the College of St. Mary Magdalene. You can follow us on Facebook. You get a real sense of the texture of our daily collegiate life through Facebook and what's posted there. We have visitor weekends and opportunities throughout the year. We have a ski weekend in the winter. We have a great weekend in the fall. Families are welcome to stop by any time during the school year or even during the summer. We're happy to give you a tour and introduce you to the faculty and the students. We're a welcoming place, and we're always happy to have visitors with us. I would encourage anyone who's interested to go online and look us up, and also, if they can, come see us.
Great, Dr. Harn. Thanks again for all you're doing there. God bless you and all the important work, and please thank your staff on behalf of us at National Catholic Register and EWTN for all the great work you're doing.
Thank you, and thank you for the work that you do as well.
And don't forget, you can listen to the show again by going to ncregister.com. Look for the icon of the microphone to listen or to download the show. On behalf of Jeanette DeMello, Dan Burke, and Tom Price, and all of us here at The Register and at EWTN Radio, this is Elena Rodriguez thanking you for joining us here on Register Radio. See you next week.
For more information about the National Catholic Register and about Register Radio, go to ncregister.com. Podcasts of Register Radio are posted on ncregister.com and on ewtn.com. Join us next week at this time for Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Register Radio is sponsored by Ignatius Press, the premier publisher of outstanding Catholic books, magazines, videos, and music, faithful to the magisterium of the Church. On the web at ignatius.com.